My name is Jim O'Neill. I'm from C.J. O'Neill and Company in Coos Bay, Oregon. Your firm has been involved in business in Oregon for 50 years. One division of that firm is we distribute glass both for Pittsburgh Plate Glass Company and Ford Motor Company. A few years ago, one of the major insurance companies approached our firm and other people engaged in the automotive business in southwestern Oregon, asking for a special price for their firm only on glass replacement. Our firm replied that our policy was to extend the same price to all insurance companies. It was also pointed out that this policy also applied with only one wholesale price being extended to all legitimate wholesale buyers for resale, and only one retail price being quoted to retail customers. Now, other people involved in the automotive business, southwestern Oregon, of course, are free to set their own prices. We also pointed out this retail price quote was the same as that quoted to those who had no insurance coverage, so that there was a retail customer was not buying on a two-tier price situation. The next consideration, in fairness to all concerned, is price. There are two pricing schedules involved in automotive glass pricing, and maybe this is part of the question that might be coming up in your minds concerning glass. One, suggested car manufacturer list prices and labor hours. Two, National Auto Glass Specification suggested list prices and labor hours. At the time in this state, other areas of this state were pretty much using the National Auto Glass Specification prices. We pointed out to the insurance company that our pricing, and we believe most of the automotive trade pricing on the coast, which we knew somewhat about through our wholesale activity, was based on suggested car manufacturer list prices and recommended labor hours rather than the national pricing. Both prices and recommended hours were considerably less than the National Auto Glass Specification recommended prices. A short time thereafter, after the survey by this insurance company, a detailed study was made of all the invoices going to this major insurance company and two other major insurance companies from our office for a six-month period in our retail sales department. This study showed a total difference of $13.50 between our method of pricing on the coast and what this company was asking for to step up to the National Auto Glass Specification at that time. We will admit that we were $13.50 higher. If there had been one more Chrysler product, we'd have been less. The other major factor to consider is a consumer without insurance. List pricing schedules being used by the automotive trade in southwestern Oregon using the lower pricing schedule result in considerable saving to these people. Examples of the different type of pricing are included. Now, this can run on the parts on a $200 windshield as much as $25 to $30 difference on that. And labor, you're talking where the car manufacturer might list 2 hours of time for this same job, the national pricing might be at 3 to 3.2. Quite frankly, the other pricing is set up for a discount program. Within a short period of time after the insurance company survey, a branch of a Portland glass company opened in our trading area. People involved with the insurance company made the statement to one of our out-of-town wholesale customers that they were responsible for bringing this glass company into our market. Other statements were that they, the glass company, could not have the business in Salem, Oregon, unless an installation shop was open in southwestern Oregon or in the Coos Bay, North Bend area. Company personnel from that glass company have made the statement in our office that this was part of a statewide deal. Other similar deals are being made in the glass business from as far away as Denver and Los Angeles, defecting and telling as to where people can go to have their work done. We had a man earlier tonight from Nationwide. We had a man come in that we have dealt with for probably 30 years with a recreational vehicle. asked to have the windshield replaced on his vehicle. We called up Nationwide because he said that would be, he was buying the vehicle, the man that we were dealing with, from a party that had his insurance sued Nationwide, and it was part of the sale agreement that the windshield would be replaced. Our firm was not even allowed to quote a price to do this job. He was informed on the phone in our own office that he must take it across to a company that operates under a franchise system from a Los Angeles situation. Our customers and customers of other automotive firms in southwestern Oregon have been under continual harassment by the insurance companies involved to force their insurer to patronize this one particular glass company. Threats have been made of insurance cancellation, no guarantee of payment for glass replacement, and outright refusal to allow customers to go to the company of their choice. We believe that Senate Bill 718 would correct these abuses, both to the consumer and the Oregon people engaged in the automotive trade. We also believe it would curb the illegal discrimination of offering lower prices that are not based on actual less cost in performing the same service to one insurance company over another. As a distributor in the glass industry and with contacts throughout the West Coast in the glass industry, very well aware that the glass industry is feeling very, very sensitive from a legal standpoint on that particular point. And that under federal law, you cannot offer to one class of customers a price for merchandise or services at less to one than the other unless you can substantiate that as a lesser cost of doing business. This is in direct violation of federal law. Are there any questions? I represent the glass industry, so you might have questions concerning our industry. It's a little different than the body shop industry.
Mr. Lombard?
Sir, I don't have questions specifically with regards to the glass industry, but I do have just a couple, few questions here. Number one, are all insurance companies treating you this way? Are you complaining about all companies, or again,
no,
are you
a group of three.
What are the three that you're complaining about?
First one would be Farmers Insurance Exchange. Second one would be Allstate. And the third one, somewhat State Farm, but this is not a particular problem in our area. In other areas, it is a problem.
Have you made any complaint to the insurance commissioner?
I have had discussions with the insurance commissioner as far as that goes. He happened to be in our office. It was not on a complaint to our business, or he happened to be in our area. We discussed it at that time.
Do you have reason, or have you been led to believe that if you did make a complaint that the matter would not be attended to?
No, sir.
Have you ever sought advice with regard, you spoke about federal law, have you ever sought advice about a Robinson-Patman Act?
There was a meeting, a glass industry meeting, pretty much a statewide meeting. I've been involved in the circles in glass, both Oregon, Washington, and so forth, and California. There was a meeting by the industry in the Portland area, in which representatives from these other states were involved. As I said, they feel the ones that are involved in this type of situation feel very, very vulnerable for what they are involved. Then that you have insurance companies that are reputable people involved in business receiving a price, say, of 40% off on their glass. Now, quite frankly, the list pricing on glass is a fictitious list. The margins are too high. And particularly the national type of pricing is set up for discounting. Now, there was a meeting involved in which, I mean, in all honesty, the word was that they were going to try to clean up their act, give them a year to do it. 2 years later, it still isn't done.
Were you
leave us a copy of your statement.
Yes, sir. Tonight.
Are there further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Bragg?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Elmar Bragg. I represent and own Bragg Appraisals in Portland. I am down here against the bill for the reasons as follows. First, as far as I'm concerned, in my opinion, this is not a consumer bill. It would be more, it should be labeled as a special interest bill because it is a bill for the body shop industry. What is the purpose of the bill? The bill obviously does not do as much for the consumer as the body shop industry would like everyone to believe. The content of the bill and the interpretation of the bill leaves a great deal to be desired. In Section 5 of the bill, it would eliminate or keep us, independent adjusters, appraisers, from possibly doing the best job that we could do when it comes to repair, having a man's car repaired. Who's going to separate the old damage on the car? Is the body shop going to separate it? Is he going to tell the guy when he brings his car in? Tell him, say, it looks old over there, fella. I think we better take that off. The body shop man's in the business to sell repairs. That's what he's there for. He's going to sell everything he can sell. I was a body shop foreman. I sold everything I could sell. That's the name of the game. Under this Section 5, who is an expert? They talk about expert and expertise. Who is an expert? Who regulates it? Who determines it? The body shop industry would have everyone believe, or would like us, the people here to believe, that they wear all the white hats and the insurance industry wears all the black ones. I have some files in here that would show that they'd be hard-pressed to wear gray. If this bill is a special interest bill, I think that maybe in closing that to really solve the problem, that if they deleted all of Section 5, that this would not be in any conflict with the independent appraisers.
Questions? If you have a copy of a statement you want to leave, Mr. Bragg, please take it part of our
records.
All right,
I have some files, but I'll turn them in later.
Mr. Wheatley? Mr. Summers?
I'm Bob Summer, appearing here on behalf of State Farm Insurance Company, and I know the hour is getting late, and I've done my best to try and summarize my summarizing, and I hope that I haven't summarized it so much we missed the point in some of these things. I am an Oregonian, kind of displaced right now from Illinois, but I was born and raised here. I adjusted claims here. I supervised claims, and I think I really understand the consumer concerns that involve this relationship we're talking about between car owners, auto body repairers, and insureds. We're opposed to the bill, and the statement goes into some detail, and maybe I think it's going to be necessary. We've been singled out here tonight, and I know in some of the other hearings and on the Senate side, and I think there's a couple misconceptions that we really need to clarify for you. And while I don't want to get into an exhaustive review of our claim procedures, we've got an auto claim philosophy, and it was read at least in part out of that ad. We can summarize that philosophy simply by saying that we do recognize the freedom of choice. We recognize the right of the owner to select a shop, but we don't recognize the right to require payment for more than is reasonable and necessary in the marketplace. And this is really, in essence, what our auto damage claim policy is saying. There's been some comments that we only do business with a limited number of shops. Nothing could be farther from the truth. We understand that we need as many people repairing automobiles in this country as we can get. We understand the problems if we can't get our cars repaired. I can give you an example. In the city of Portland, our people, both insurers and claimant, have selected 143 shops in the first 4 months of this year to repair their cars. This is at least 70% of the total garages in the metropolitan area. We believe our percent of garages that our people are selecting may be as high as 90% in other areas of the state. We don't always know in all cases where the person finally gets his car repaired. We've heard the comments that would lead you to believe that our customers, claimants, and insurers are unhappy with State Farm. We simply don't have the evidence to verify this. Our success has always been judged in the marketplace by growth. We have a fine complaint record. I can cite you in 1976, we serviced claims under maybe 67,000 coverages. And our records indicate only 149 inquiries to the insurance department. And I'm sure that we would be the first to admit that we're human, we can make mistakes, our people are human. We try very hard to service that product, and we work hard to keep our mistakes at a minimum and rectify those when we find out about them. The Oregon Insurance Department concluded a very exhaustive look at State Farm's claim procedures, and we can suffice it to say their cover letter indicated that their office considered the report to be most favorable to the Oregon operation. Probably at State Farm, we realize that customer satisfaction is what insurance is all about. Unsatisfied insureds are not going to purchase insurance or recommend our company to friends or neighbors. We're not the largest insurer in Oregon, but we do have about 12% of the market. In the last 10 years, we've increased 79%. People are buying our product. We issue six-month auto policies, which really puts us in a unique position because twice a year, these 233,000 people have to vote for State Farm with a premium payment. That's 466,000 votes of satisfaction. These people are not going to come back to State Farm if they think they're not getting claim service. You can say we're opposed to the bill simply not because of its impact on State Farm philosophy and procedures. We can operate in any environment. We've learned to do that. We're really concerned about the impact of this bill on the consumer, the person on the street that has to buy the insurance. You know, the question isn't whether the insurer can pay the costs that are probably inherent in this legislation. Obviously, we're going to have to pay whatever price is going to be required to repair autos. We have to come back to that basic proposition that whatever added costs are inherent in the bill, and I heard a figure tonight of $25 million from somebody. The only person that's going to pay that is the guy that buys that insurance. I know it's getting late. I think there's some misunderstanding on how the legislation affects repair costs. If you have the time, I'd like to make a few comments on it. I have heard some questions. Well, there's nothing in the bill here that says auto repair rates are going to go up. But we have to talk a little bit about labor rates. We find that labor rates are going to vary, with the highest price shops charging $1 to $2 more an hour than the majority of shops in the marketplace. Well, maybe this doesn't sound like very much, and maybe it doesn't sound like much on one car. But let's take a look at State Farm in Oregon. We paid out last year $12.7 million in crash damage automobiles. And in our best judgment, a $1 an hour labor increase throughout the state of Oregon, if that were to be the result of this bill, would cost our people over $400,000. And when we interpolate that over the statewide, that could be $3 million. $1. And you just can't get away from the fact that these millions, we pay them out, we collect them from our policyholders, and they're paid to those who repair the automobiles. I would like you to, at your, when you get some time, we've attached some exhibits to the statement, and I think the exhibits really illustrate the problem of cost imposed by body shops. There were some comments here tonight about repair estimates. Well, as you take a look at Exhibit 3 and 4, these are from Portland Garages. And you'll see we were charged and we paid $5 a day for an automobile to sit at a place of business. We were charged 1% of the total estimate as a fee to write the estimate. One of those even goes so far as to charge us $48 to inspect the damage, and another adds 20% onto a tow bill that was evidently submitted from an independent tow agency. Now, I'm going to be the first to say that we're not going to contend these are illegal, but we suggest the need for arm's-length dealing between insurers, garagemen, and the need for competition in this auto repair industry. There's been the question of what's an unreasonable charge. Well, when you put yourself in the position of the person that owns the car and he goes to the shop of his choice, there's nothing in this bill that would lead him to believe the insurer is not going to have to pay the price that is charged to repair the car. We can't be litigating each one of these. We can't have our insureds hung up because the garage will not release the car because they're $2 over on the labor rate. The poor customer is the guy who's caught in the middle, and if we do litigate and we win, fine, but the costs are passed right back on the guy that buys insurance. I just have to ask the question, who except the unscrupulous or inefficient repair operation is going to benefit by all this? We really think, and I think maybe it's been missed in some of the testimony, that the intent of the bill's proponents is to leave the customer with the false impression that he can have his car repaired at any body shop, with the insurer being obliged to pay whatever price that shop might charge. And you only have to refer back to the sign that's being recommended, and why else would that sign, proposed in Section 4, remain silent regarding an insurer's obligation to pay only those charges that are reasonable and necessary in a competitive marketplace, or the right to inform consumers that competing garages may provide quality repairs at lower cost? There's nothing in there. Our auto damage claim policy, We took out the advertisement, and I should speak to that, not to wastefully spend money, but we're trying to let auto body repairs, insureds, our own employees, citizens know what our policy is, and that's the reason the ad's in the publication. I guess maybe in closing, we might want to make a comment here. I have personally visited with some of the Oregon Auto Body Craftsmen Association leadership, and they will maintain, even if a majority of shops, as many as 90% in the Portland area, charge prices ranging from $12 to $14 an hour, now that's 9 out of 10. If a customer selects a shop charging $16, $18, or $20 an hour, they would believe that the insured should be required to pay the uncompetitive price. Now, under this proposition, these added costs are only going to be paid by the public. And really, this is the basis of our fear that this bill is going to lead to increased costs. To the extent it interferes with competition, we believe the result's inevitable. And I said in closing, I'd like to make one more comment. You just can't overlook the fact that the auto repair industry is unregulated. We know there are many fine body shops that are doing fine repairs at competitive prices. But I think even the proponents of this bill will agree that there are unscrupulous repairmen. We don't want cars repaired shoddily. We don't want these problems to happen to people, but we have nobody to turn to. There is no regulatory agency, no federal government, no insurance commissioner, nobody. And if I could urge this committee to do one thing, would be to continue this investigation into this total picture involving insurance practices, the commissioner, and the auto repair industry, so that there is some way that the consumer in Oregon can benefit by the fact that there are unscrupulous garages. And I think maybe with this, I should close. The night's getting late, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Questions? We'll review your statement.
I appreciate that.
After the hearing, and it may well be that we will have further questions that we will want to address
Fine.
To you.
Anything you would have, we'll get you the answer.
Mr. Wheatley, did you have anything to add?
I did have a few statements, Mr. Chairman, if I may. I became involved with this issue and became aware of the conflict about 2 or 3 years ago when I was retained to represent an insurance company, State Farm, in connection with a lawsuit, which more or less arises out of this same type of conflict. Since that time, there have been 3 other lawsuits, making a total of 4 lawsuits that were filed against various insurance companies with this same underlying problem. My partner, John Jacob, I think, has left with you a red book here that contains a summary of the important part of that litigation, the complaint, and the ruling in the 3 cases that have been decided by the court. But naturally, I was thinking if I was called at 7 o'clock, I was going to talk about all 4, and I've scratched it down to only talking about 1 and talking as fast as I can now. But taking the Safeco case, which I think is the 3rd one, it kind of underlies or underscores what the issue is in this case. In the Safeco case, the plaintiff who operated a garage in Eugene had a customer by the name of Mr. Black that was in an accident, and he said, Mr. Black said, all right, I'd like to have my car repaired by the plaintiff's garage. Safeco Insurance Company then, I don't remember the exact figures, but hypothetically, maybe plaintiff came up with an estimate of $600. Safeco said, well, $500 is what other garages are doing it for. That's the fair market value, and that's all that we're willing to pay. If you want to go to the plaintiff, go ahead. But if you do so, you'll have to pay the added cost, which is beyond that, which is the fair market value. So the plaintiff lost the customer, lost a particular job, became unhappy and filed a lawsuit in the nature of interference with contract, saying that I had a customer, I've lost him because you encouraged him to go to somebody else that would do the work for less. In that court, or in that case rather, the court ruled as a matter of law that this was proper for the insurance company because they do have an interest in trying to see to it that an insured simply doesn't go out to his brother or anybody that he finds and pay $600, $700, $800 for a job when the fair market value would be $500 or whatever the figure might be. The other, of the other 3 cases, 2 of them have resulted in similar rulings by the court. The judge's ruling is a matter of law in 3 of the cases now and entering a judgment for the insurance companies on the theory that what they had done was proper in the circumstances. The other case has not been yet reached judgment. Now, after the, it seems to me, after the Auto Body Craftsman Association of the members that were primarily interested in this philosophy failed in their efforts at court. They did initiate some interest with the insurance commissioner and principally had an investigation with respect to State Farm. You have, I believe, one of the exhibits before you already with respect to the finding of the insurance commissioner after making an inspection of 4,000 or more claims by State Farm and looking into any complaints that might be involved. The insurance commissioner, after this extensive investigation, found absolutely no improper practices on the part of State Farm, but they did point out what was the underlying conflict here, again pointing out that State Farm's philosophy was any insured could take his car to any garage he wanted. It didn't matter, but if he wanted the luxury of going to some garage that was going to charge more than the fair market value, then he would have to pay that added cost. This is what the garage men who are supporting this bill don't want. And as the insurance commissioner summarized on page 12 of his report, he said these shops believe that they should establish the cost of repair at the level of their choosing with no countervailing pressures from the informed consumers. And that's essentially what we have heard here this evening, I think, from several of the garage men saying, yes, I charge $16 an hour, even though this other gentleman charges 14 or 15. I think that I should decide how much I'm going to charge for my work, and I think that if I charge my customer that, then the insurance company should pay for it. The difficulty with that philosophy, and one reason why it does not work in this system, among other reasons, is because when the customer comes in, he says, my car is damaged, I want it repaired, what do you think it'll cost? And the garageman says $600. Once you tell him it's going to cost more than $100, he really doesn't care. $800, $1,500, all he's ever going to pay is $100 anyway. So his attitude toward saying, hey, that's a little bit high to be ripping me off for $800, that job doesn't look that bad. He doesn't have the same motivation to go out that he would if every one of the $800 was coming out of his pocket. So I think it is unrealistic to say that every customer should just go out and pick any price that he wants or go to any garage that he wants regardless of price and let them charge the insurance company. Now, it is true that the insurance company could, I think, at least under my interpretation, which I know some people disagree with, could probably say anyway, no, I'm not going to pay that. We'll fight about it. But then once you do that, you end up with a very difficult dispute, and we have already heard some from dissatisfied insureds, where the insurance company says, this garage charged you $800, and we have several other garages that would have done it for $600, so that's more than the fair market value. It would end up with, I think, a considerable amount of additional conflict between the insurance companies and the insured and the garagemen. Section 3.1 that is referred to, which says basically that the insurance company cannot refer or cannot direct that the work be done by a particular garage, everyone seems to agree that that's a good, or that there's no problem with that. And I'm sure that none of the insurance companies really do object to it, although there has been some indication that Allstate on some occasions has. But basically, we know that if an insurance company says, I'm willing to pay $500 for this work, but not a penny more, they aren't really going to care where the insured goes, I presume, in that situation. If he says, well, I want to go to my brother, and he is going to charge $200 more. The problem that the insurance companies have is they do not want to pay anything more than the fair market value. Finally, it seems to me that the real concern of the legislature would be, if they were looking toward any legislation to solve some real or potential problem in this area, would be to look at the quality of the work and whether or not it's being done at a reasonable price. This particular bill certainly does absolutely nothing to improve the quality of the work. There's no indication that a garage such as Bob Godfrey Pontiac in Eugene that I'm familiar with, which I believe is one of the highest priced labor rates in town, but there's no indication that they are going to do a better job than some of the gentlemen that testified that they work for less. So this bill has nothing to do with improving the quality of the work. And as far as the reasonable prices are concerned, it has just the opposite effect in that regard. So, in closing, I would say that if we were to look at this problem in terms of what is going to help the consumer or the public or the insured, the garageman or whatever, it would be unrealistic to say that a bill that would tell an insured or an owner of a car, you cannot have your insurance company tell you, even if you ask them, that they might go to this garage or that garage or that garage. That certainly isn't helping any insured that says, I don't know where I want to take the car, I don't know anything about it. And just tell him, no, we will not allow you to even ask the question. Because if you ask the question, well, you'll let them ask the question. But if the insurance company makes the mistake of saying, well, I'm going to answer it for you, then you'll be subjected to potential enormous punitive damages for saying it. That certainly doesn't help anyone. And if there is a problem in this area, it would seem to me that that the problem in the public perhaps would need more protection from the garage industry itself rather than from the insurance company. We have a considerable amount of special legislation which directly is related to insurance companies, unfair settlement practices, things of that nature. We have the insurance commissioner himself, an office that's set up to handle these complaints. Maybe he isn't doing as good a job as he should. Maybe he's doing a good job and people don't understand it fully. I don't know. But there is a considerable amount of protection for the public with respect to the insurance end of it. But as far as the garages are concerned and the garage men, there is simply no special legislation that does meet that issue, and which would perhaps satisfy even some of the proponents of this bill who complain about the fact that there is shoddy work being done by some garages who may be undercutting them. It certainly isn't right for somebody to go to Bob Godfrey or anyone else, whether he's charging $12 an hour or $18 an hour, have him turn out bad work and have some customer have to wait 8 months before they finally got it fixed. But passing some anti-insurance legislation that is simply going to increase the premium to try to solve the problem in that manner doesn't seem very realistic. And so those are some of the reasons that I'm opposed to it. If anyone has any questions, which I doubt they would, well, I wish you would have to answer.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Just a comment. I was first going to question in the Safeco case. I see you get your non-suit from non-suit Charlie. But then I see that one of your own Lane County judges gave you a summary judgment, so.
I can't really claim that one. I wasn't the attorney, but on two of the other cases I was, and they were from other judges.
Try to avoid spending a salary for the people. Jaquan?
This is one of my favorites.
Just kidding. Mr. Jaquan? Did you have any? Were you?
I think so. Pretty late. When I was about 14 years old, one time we had some company for supper, and when it got all through, my dad said to me, John, you had 7 chances to shut up, and you missed them all. And I don't think I'll miss them tonight. I think they said exactly what I want to say. I signed that out. Thank you.
Well, you've been here a long time. If you have something to add, let's try to foreclose you, because we're going to try to finish. So.
I think you've all seen me enough.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Thomas Peterson. I've been in the insurance racket, if you prefer to call it that, for 2 decades. Before that, I was in the repair racket with a body shop and a dealership for over 1 decade. There's a lot of this business that's miserable, there's a lot of it that's wonderful. But at this time of the night, let's consider exactly what we are talking about here, and that is Senate Bill 718, now before the House. This is not Senate Bill, by the way. This is Mr. Groner's bill and the Oregon Auto Body Craftsman. Out of their last month's publication of the Craftsman, it states the goal of Senate Bill 718 has only been intended to return the repair market back to us, where we, the independent businessman, could once again take the reins. Well, this is fine, but how is he going to take the reins? There are many ways of taking the reins, but usually the means and method of sponsoring a bill such as this is to pass legislation that will enrich them. Here's an article out of the paper, a very recent edition of the Portland Oregonian, and I know they were very, very good about sending out the copies from the Portland Oregonian when they won the case against Allstate over in the coast area. But here's one that says that one recent night, and this is written by one of the Oregonian staff, it says, one recent night when the drops still meant no rain, an elderly gentleman failed to see a stop sign and nudged into the front of my car. There was no dispute over the facts. I was in the right and he wasn't. Damage to my car amounted to a twisted piece of the front bumper. I called a parts house and found it would cost $14.03 to replace the damaged bumper section. I was willing to settle with the man for $25, but his family urged me to submit a claim to his insurance company so that his rates would go up and he would quit driving. I agreed. I alerted his insurance company that a claim would be coming and then proceeded to round up a couple of estimates as they asked me from body shops. The first body shop wanted about $215 to fix the damage. Because the front fender panel was scratched, the estimator argued that I really deserved a new one. He added to that the cost of some moldings, the $14.03 for the bumper part that I only needed, the labor charge and miscellaneous amounts for paint and so forth and so on. The second body shop wanted $260 to fix my car. It wanted about $100 to repair the fender, the first one about $75 to replace, and since the damage seemed to be around the bumper piece, the estimator said I should take no chances and replace the entire bumper. He then tacked on labor charges and miscellaneous amounts for paint and repair costs. "You want to replace my entire bumper?" I gasped. He said, "Is an insurance company paying for this?" I sighed in agreement. "Well, then we'll write down the cost of the new bumper, and if you have the work done by us, we can work something out if you don't want it replaced." The tone of his voice left no doubt as to his motives. Well, that's one way of returning the reins to the independent body shop. Let's talk about now the bill itself. I have nothing against, and neither does my company, providing for the owner to have reasonable choice in where he wants to send his car. We've heard a lot about what is reasonable tonight. We've had other people come up and say the insurance company would send out somebody and if the estimate looked reasonable, they would let it go. Now, does reasonable mean that it's $10 too high, $20 too high, or as in the case of the one gentleman tonight, $24.70 too high? Or as State Farm has mentioned, multiply that by a few thousand claims and you're talking about several million dollars. At the meeting we had in the Senate, as Mr. Groner stated, we had 5 hours of testimony. What he didn't mention was that all but two people were from the body shops reciting horror stories that had been gathered by the Oregon Auto Body Craftsmen since 1970, a period of 7 years. The two people took 15 minutes. The idea of passing a law against two or three insurance companies just isn't feasible. There is no way that you can pass a law against the companies that have been named tonight without painting every company with the same bucket of tar. There are over 400 companies writing in the state of Oregon or licensed to write in the state of Oregon. Let's get back again to the bill. Under your section 3, we've already discussed most of that. But let's hit one section that nobody has hit. Section 4, and a nice sign that they want to put up, an innocuous sign that says, pursuant to Oregon insurance law, an insurance company may not require the repair be made to a private passenger motor vehicle by a particular person or repair shop. You have a right to have your automobile repaired in the shop of your choice. That sounds innocuous, but it's insidious. It's there for a reason, and the reason is to convince the owner that he does not have to get competitive estimates, shop for price, or go anywhere else, or possibly even have his insurance company inspected. If we're going to have a sign, let's make it an honest sign and add on one more sentence. If an insurance company is paying the repair bill, they have a contractual right to inspect your vehicle before repairs are started. There's a lot of importance in that. Let me mention why. We've heard a lot about the labor rates in Portland or the rest of Oregon, that they're $13 to $16 to $18. We keep in our company an average claim payment by branch for every branch we have, and I handle 7 western states for physical damage and property damage. That's first party and third party coverage, also some of the inland marine on the equipment, that type of thing. Regardless, Portland branch has succeeded in being the highest in our company 3 of the last 7 quarters, in excess of that amount generated, for instance, by San Francisco, whose labor rates now are a minimum of $21 per hour, and go up to $29.50 in the body shops and $36 an hour in the mechanical shops on Van Ness Boulevard. There has to be a reason for that, and one of the reasons that I have found for our company is because a great many of the body shops get the car in, get the authorization to start the work, and that has to come from the owner. It cannot come from the insurance company. We do not authorize repairs. We don't own the car. The owner authorizes repairs. You already heard one man sit here and mentioned that by the time another guy came down to look at the car, he already had it torn apart and so forth. That is precisely the reason some of our prices are higher in Washington or in Oregon than they are in Washington or California or other places, is because by the time we have a chance to see it, they've already started work on the thing. They've already done so much that we can't tell what needs yet to be done and how much they actually have done. So we don't really need a sign that says that. On the Section 5E, negotiating for safety, workmanship, and guarantee the quality of the motor vehicle repairs, the insured can't do that because he doesn't know what he is negotiating for. And I'll assure you, if he is going to be the one that chooses a repairer and the insurance company can do absolutely nothing but go along with it, we can't guarantee them either.
But what is this bill going to do for the public besides raise the price? Is it going to stop any of these stories you've heard tonight? I think not. It does not address itself to that problem. Our experience has been, and I keep track of this because I get the insurance commissioner complaints on automobiles not only from Oregon, we get very few, but from Washington, Idaho, Utah, Nevada, California, and Arizona. And we have found that we have paid far more to redo work done in the shops of the owner's choice than we've ever paid to redo work in any shop that we've recommended. This bill is not going to change that subject any. It's not going to do anything else. Now let's mention discounts and direction of work. Our company does not direct, as it were, per se, but we believe in directing, absolute directing, with glass claims. You heard the gentleman who runs a glass distributorship. Do any of you know what the discount is in glass? What do you think? Mr. Chairman, here's the markup on glass. Do you have an idea? Pull it, figure out of the air. Any, your idea of what the markup is on glass, percentage markup.
100%?
1,000. 1,000% markup, which is list less 90%, which is exactly what the distributor gets from the manufacturer, one of the five major manufacturers of glass. Shatterproof, Pittsburgh Plate, Libby Owens Ford, Carlite, CarGuard. There's also SafeLite. If any of you drive a General Motors car, there's a nice little wire antenna in certain mounts for the radio rather than the antenna mast on the fender. On a little old Chevrolet Vega, for instance, that little piece of wire costs $32 more than it does in the same windshield without the wire. I have been through two glass plants. It takes 2 minutes and 42 seconds to put that wire in and test it, and the wire costs 4 cents. It's put in by machine, and it has an 11-cent Packard pigtail that goes on the end of it. And it cost $32 more. The reason is that 1,000% markup. Now let's go into the flat rate. He's talking about NAG, National Auto Glass, as against the manufacturer. Both of them are far too high. With rare exception, there is no windshield that a glazier cannot put in for less than 1 hour. There's not a Volkswagen mechanic that can't put in a Volkswagen Bug windshield in about 35 minutes. Their factory flat rate is 1.2. NAG's is 3.0 hours. And I might also mention that the Volkswagen price on that glass is $25.75, and the FCW, foreign car windshield number for NAGS, the list price is 59-something, unless it's recently went up a little bit more, and we probably get 15% discount from both of them. That's why we want discounts. In Montana, for instance, our discounts run from 10 to 70%. In Seattle, we get 66 2/3% discount in one shop. We get 60% in four other shops. There's only one company in Oregon that is trying to break the collusion that's existed in the glass industry down here for years, and that's SafeLite. All the rest of them have been holding it at 40, but we get up to 70 in a lot of places. And it makes a difference. It makes a great difference on what John Q. Public, some of which are sitting right behind me, and on occasion you gentlemen are John Q. Public yourself when you're buying insurance. It makes a world of difference what you're paying, whether or not we get the discount on glass, or whether we not or not we let some of these, and he admitted to the inflated list. It's not inflated, it's astronomical, without justification. But it's there. And it's probably the same thing in a lot of businesses that I don't know. But gentlemen, I know this one. And this bill is not going to help the public. It's not going to help you. It's not going to help anyone, even probably not body shops, unless they can cut out competitive estimates and cut out more competition. By the way, the physical damage section of the policy I have virtually memorized. If anybody would like to ask me a question, I'll quote it to you. If not, thank you very kindly. I've enjoyed it. I'll give you this little article. You can get a little amusement out of reading.
Who did you say you were with, Mr. Peterson?
United Pacific. In United Pacific, our motto is, UP, we pay.
I'm glad I am.
Mr. Fairhope? Keith Fairhope?
Can you
Wait a minute, I'm right.
Oh. I'm afraid it'd be hard to follow in the United Pacific. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have already recently this week delivered to your offices my testimony in opposition to this bill. And you all have it, and I hope you've read it. And in the interest of time, I'm going to forego reading it tonight. And I just want to say that everything's been covered, and no sense going into it again.
Could you identify yourself?
Thank you. Yeah,
Del Llewellyn, Farmers Insurance.
We have your statement. And,
yes.
Yes, as I say, we do. Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Byer? Mr. McLaughlin? Mr. Is it Hilbert? Hulbert? Mr. Highsmith?
Chairman, committee. I'm presently a teacher. Prior to becoming a teacher, I was employed for 3 years by Allstate Insurance, both as a drive-in and a field adjuster in the Eugene area. During that time, I was involved in the practices affected by Senate Bill 718. All shops are classified as either controlled or non-controlled shops. A control shop is one which has agreed to do the repairs for the amount shown on the adjuster's estimate. I was instructed to direct all possible work to our control shops. Many times, these control shops agree to do this work without ever seeing the damage. The sole purpose of this system is to control the cost of repairs. In the Eugene-Springfield area, approximately 10% of the shops are presently considered control shops. On the surface, this practice appears to be just good business. However, I would like to point out some pitfalls. It does take away the consumer's right to select a shop of his choice. It does eliminate the opportunity for 90% of the shops to competitively bid on repairs. Frequently, and sometimes only too late, it is discovered that a control shop is doing unsatisfactory repairs. Because of heavy schedules or possibly from lack of proper training, adjusters often overlook damages, thereby leaving doubt in the shop's mind as to what actually they should be repairing. I believe in free enterprise, open competition, and quality repairs. The solution to the problem is obvious. I feel we should place the responsibility of the appraising back to the shops that are actually doing the repairs. I also feel that insurance companies have the right to control costs and to inspect this damage. They claim that if Senate Bill 718 passes, costs will rise and be uncontrollable. However, if Senate Bill 718 passes, competitive bidding among prior repair shops will control these costs. More important than even cost, repair shops will be forced through competitive industry practices to be concerned about the quality of the work
for which they will be held responsible. And in closing, I'd like to make one comment. It might be of interest to the committee if we knew how many of the shops that have testified this evening that oppose this bill are considered control shops in their area. Thank you.
Questions? President Fulmer?
Yeah, you said you were directed to send business to the control shops. Was that a written directive ever? Could you just describe?
No, it was understood as policy throughout the company that we were to use control shops. And they would keep a record monthly, and we were judged on our performance based on somewhat on how many of these vehicles would go into a control shop.
Do they estimating through your own employees exclusively, or did you use independents at all?
The only time independents were used when it was in an outlying area where it was not advantageous for company adjusters to inspect the damage.
Further questions? Representative Lamar.
You say you were an adjuster yourself for a while?
Yes, sir. 3 years.
Did you have any training in estimating?
Yes, sir. Prior training, I was in industry about 15 years prior to going to work for Allstate.
Could you generalize, or could you say with regards to the other adjusters, whether there were there any training requirements for adjusters?
Yes. There was a period of time that they were hiring college graduates who had no prior experience in the automotive business. And they were sent to a school, I believe it was 2 weeks. They were called hot school graduates. And
called what?
Hot school.
Hot school.
Graduates, yes, sir. And, of course, then in coming back to their respective areas, then they were given additional training.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Edgar.
Thank you very much.
My name is Fortune, Mr. Edgar, to have your name on the last of the 20 sheets.
My name is Walt Edgar. I run a body shop in Portland for over 35 years.
Have a seat and be comfortable.
I came at 4 and a glad I stayed. Over this 35 years, well, I've seen a lot of progress. I saw body work start at $3 an hour. Our shop now is $14 an hour. There's a lot of shops in town that are more. There's some that are less. It is a privilege to, for these years, to have done work for a lot of wonderful people in the state and some very fine insurance companies. Over this time, well, I could write several books on the problems that have existed and the things that are happening in the body shops today. Over these years, well, we had 3 estimates that were demanded, and the insurance company would take the 3 estimates and only call a crony shop, tell them what the low bid was, and then have the guy go over there and have his car repaired at about $5 or $10 less. The shop made the estimate, their expense, and added up to. We had a heck of a time making a living. A lot of body shops went bankrupt over all these years. They didn't have the experience. They didn't know how to estimate properly. I'll cut it short. It's late. I have a 1975 car in my garage. The 75 Granada. State Farm made an estimate. I repaired it on their estimate. The car's been there for a year and a half, and they haven't settled the claim. They haven't come over to my shop and offered to go over to find out if the car was repaired properly. They just have shut it off. The lady went and bought a new car. She's paying interest. My money's tied up. They make people go broke this way. It isn't fair, fellas. We need a law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edgar.
Any questions?
Representative Frommeyer.
I was just going to say, Mr. Edgar had been here since 4, and if he's written out his statement and wants us to have it for the record, I'd appreciate reading it if you want to.
Once you leave that, we'll have copies made for the committee.
Okay, I'll leave part of it, and I'll send you more.
I have missed them. I'm not through the list yet. I'm trying to jump around and balance things out a little bit for these people who have been waiting. Mr. Davis, Mr. McCabe.
Michael McCabe. I'm Western Zone Counsel for Allstate Insurance Company. I'd like to thank you and the committee for an opportunity to testify here this evening. I too had a rather extensive testimony, but in view of the lateness of the hour, we'll try to summarize to the greatest extent possible, yet ask if I might possibly reserve the right subsequently to submit for the record comments with respect to things I did not address orally.
I suspect we'll have a second but more abbreviated hearing at which the committee will be probably in a position, having reviewed a number of the statements that have been submitted, to ask a good many more specific questions.
All right. Well, let me run through briefly then what happens. I think initially one of the most important things that the committee was through this evening is to realize the fact that the fundamental issue before you does not involve some interrelationship of insurance companies and auto body repair shops, as some would have you believe, but rather the real issue involves a more fundamental and more important question of how best to guarantee the consumers of this state the highest quality auto repair at the most competitive possible price, while at the same time generally holding the line on insurance premiums. Allstate's ability to spend money on auto repair is obviously tied directly to our ability to collect it in the form of insurance premiums from the consumers of this state. Thus, any factor, including a change in the law which will increase our cost of doing business here, only means that the cost of automobile insurance will increase accordingly. And in our view, that is just what will happen should SB 718 become law. Section 3.2 of SB 718 provides in pertinent part that an insurance company may not recommend a particular repair facility. As I will discuss subsequently, such would require a significant change in the way Allstate does business here. But more important, it is a change which we believe, based on real-world experience in the state of New York, will force the consumers of this state to pay more, while benefiting no one except perhaps a few body shops, which are unable to compete effectively currently with their brethren. New York is the only state in the Union which has a provision such as this in its law, and it is a fact that New York's law does permit insurance companies to recommend repair facilities if requested by their insurer. However, in New York, the average cost of settling all property damage claims is $429 compared to $309 in the state of Oregon. In other words, it costs almost 35% more to repair cars in New York under the kind of competitive restrictions you are now being asked to consider than it does here. Now, obviously, some of the cost differentiation is attributable to elements other than the restrictions on shop recommendation in the state of New York. But a review of the total cost in other densely populated states, including the neighboring state of New York, such as New Jersey, reveals that New York does in fact lead the list, and we have been able to observe that costs there have in fact increased since we even had this kind of restriction placed on our ability to recommend a particular repair facility. And not only does does Oregon shame New York in terms of the effective manner in which the body shop industry competes here, but Oregon citizens also fare well when compared to other major states. For example, as I indicated, the average cost of settling all property damage claims is $400 in Illinois, $391 in New Jersey, $340 in Ohio, and $343 in California. I will subsequently provide the committee with a chart which breaks down the results, the average cost per coverage in the property damage, collision, and comprehensive, and also gives an important figure which we believe the committee should take note of, and that is the premium charges the citizens of this state pay for the coverages which will be affected by this bill compared to the citizens of other states. A review of that chart will reveal quickly, I think, the citizens of Oregon currently benefit from a very competitive market in this area, and an adverse change such as that contemplated in our view by 718 will increase costs and will increase them substantially. And I think before you would accede to those who have you follow what we believe to be the unenlightened leadership of the state of New York, you should insist upon a strong and persuasive finding made on substantial evidence of record that the provisions of 718 will better serve the public than does the current system, which is currently being evolved and improved. Now, obviously, I have sat here throughout the course of this hearing, and I submit that while obviously problems have been raised, they are not problems which necessarily could possibly be solved or even tend to be solved by passage of 718. Let me turn briefly to explain how Allstate does business in this state and the impact 718 might have on our claim service here. Generally, our desire to hold the line on costs while at the same time providing very high quality repair led to the evolution of what we believe to be a claim settlement system matched by none in the insurance industry. For example, to aid customers, Allstate pioneered in the drive-in claim service in 1952. These drive-in centers permit a customer, when his car is safely drivable, to obtain an itemized damage appraisal at a time and place convenient to him. He is given a reservation to guarantee that he will not have to waste his time waiting for the availability of someone to appraise the damage to his automobile. These drive-in claim centers are staffed by experienced individuals proficient in damage appraisal. In fact, a large percentage of our property damage adjusters have had prior body shop experience as service managers, body shop managers, and frequently as shop owners. Now, upon the completion of an evaluation of the needed repairs at one of these drive-in facilities, Allstate will ask the customer whether he or she desires that repairs be performed at a particular shop. If they do, we will attempt to work out an agreed price with that shop, and the repairs are then performed there. Indeed, this is a very common practice here, as a large percentage of our collision and comprehensive claims in the state of Oregon are performed at shops not recommended by Allstate.
Excuse me, but do you have a policy of recommending shops?
Our policy is as follows. When a customer comes into one of these drive-in claim centers, or if there's not a drive-in claim center close to them, and we go to adjust their car, we will ask them if they have a preference. And if they do, we will then proceed to attempt to work out an agreement with the shop they choose to go to. Now, if they don't, and it was noted here earlier by people who are out in the field on a regular basis that probably 3/4 of the people have never before been to a body shop or don't feel comfortable in terms of considering themselves an educated consumer capable of making intelligent consumer decisions, we will recommend a shop to them. Now, this practice of recommending a shop led to a further evolution in our claim settlement practice, which we call a part and parcel of a VIP claim program. Now, when we recommend a shop, in the event the customer expresses no preference, we reach the decision that the public interest requires that we accept the obligation to make sure that the needed repairs performed at a shop we recommend will be satisfactorily completed. This is the heart of this VIP program, and it provides, in pertinent part, that when a customer goes to a shop recommended by Allstate, the repairs performed at that shop will be guaranteed in writing for as long as a customer owns that car.
Not recommended by the body shop or recommended by
Recommended by Allstate. If we recommend a body shop to the consumer and he goes there, we will guarantee in writing, we provide him with a written guarantee. I'd be happy to read it to the committee if they like.
We can read it. Let me ask you another question. Are you familiar with the terms controlled shop and non-controlled shop?
The controlled shop is not a shop, to my knowledge, used within the Allstate Insurance Company. The shops the only frame of reference
I heard the testimony
previously. Now, I don't know when the gentleman left Allstate, but the term competitive shop is used infrequently in the Allstate Insurance Company.
Is competitive solely price-oriented, or is there a price-quality trade-off?
Well, it has to be quality if we're going to guarantee the repairs and pay for re-repair. So clearly, I think quality would be tantamount, price of paramount importance.
Well, a competitive shop, it has the same meaning as a control shop. It's a shop that's...
We don't... No,
Is it a shop that's agreed to do perform the work on the basis of your estimate?
Basically, yes. These are generally shops that come to us.
Yeah, well,
and say, you know,
my question isn't judgmental. I just wanted to.
But basically, yeah, that's
the terminology you're quoting right. But there is such a, there is a type of shop which agrees to do the work on the basis of your estimate.
That's correct. You know, subject to some sub, you know.
Are these written agreements?
No, they're not. No, it's a pattern of practice type system which we have assured ourselves of the quality of the repair at that shop. We have talked to the people. The controlling factor is not that they will do it for the estimate we write, but that they are necessary. That is part of the system that gets it into the system. But we have made a determination that from a cost standpoint, they are more competitive than vis-a-vis the balance or the majority or the remainder of the competitors within that area.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask this question? Now, this VIP service that you offer that to claimants as well as insureds?
No.
Just to insureds?
To our insured, as I understand.
So, okay, so your claimants against you, and if you were here earlier, and I think you heard a number of the complaints were with regards to third-party claimants. At least this is the facts that were presented to us. They don't get this same kind of treatment.
I would like to reserve that opinion, correct myself on the record. If we recommend to a claimant, a third-party claimant, that he go to the shop, there's a strong possibility we will guarantee the repairs performed at that shop for him. But the question is, if he does not, then indeed he, in fact, is in the third-party liability system if he is not satisfied with what we believe to be a reasonable settlement of his liability claim. That's an issue aside from whether or not the shop we send him to, we will repair the guarantee. I can provide you with an answer before the close of this hearing. We'll do so.
Okay.
The concept of an insurer providing a guarantee of this nature has been endorsed formally before committees such as this by the body shop spokesman, including the president of the New Jersey Body Shop Association and the council in Washington, D.C. of the National Trade Association of Body Shops of the Automotive Service Council. Mr. Chairman, the legislation now before you would necessarily result in the elimination of the repair guarantee program at Allstate. And it seems to us that before you rob the consumer of this benefit, you must yourselves be assured that you will be able to tell your constituents who are Allstate policyholders that you have seen to it that 100% of the body shops in this state, including those shops which represent the majority as non-members of the trade association, will guarantee in writing the quality of the work performed, will re-repair at no extra cost if the customer is not satisfied, and will also absorb the total cost of arbitration for purposes of resolving an ultimate dispute, which Allstate will do as part of its guarantee program. Notwithstanding the praise of our program by its body shop representatives and others, we continue to be accused of attempting to subvert competition by directing a limited amount of our total business to certain shops which, as the argument goes, charge lower prices and perform less than top quality work. In the light of the real world, Mr. Chairman, that argument must fail. And I think it's important briefly, I would like to discuss them extensively, but I think it's important briefly to look at the various elements of that accusation and the facts surrounding it. First of all, the allegation is premised on what I believe to be an absurd theory that true competition will exist only when all body shops charge the exact same prices. Indeed, if that were the case, violation of federal antitrust laws would probably be presumed under a theory of conscious parallelism. Secondly, the theory assumes that the consumer can always protect his own best interest simply by buying the highest priced among competing products and services. Again, consumers, those who would urge careful shopping and intelligent buying decisions, would shudder at the thought of any official legislative endorsement of this highest price means highest quality theory. Again, it must be remembered that when settling claims of this nature, insurance companies are in fact the consumer and are spending the money of the total population of policyholders they serve. Finally, in the area of competition as it impacts upon the consumer, I think it is important to point out the widely held belief that competition only works with an informed consumer. And it's been pointed out here several times tonight that in the body shop area, the automobile repair area, consumers are not generally well educated. Moreover, if in fact an insurance company were required to pay the total cost of repairs made at the shop of the consumer's choice, once that consumer stumbles into a shop for whatever reason, any impetus for competition is gone. If a consumer would go into a sporting goods store to buy a pair of skis and they charge him $100, he has an impetus to look elsewhere. But when he goes into the body shop and they say, we'll fix it for $500, your deductible's $100, he's going to pay the $100 anyway. And his impetus to go find another shop does not exist. So competition in that context is illusory, and the benefits of competition are simply not available. I intended to speak to some time about our response to various historical accusations against Allstate and others in the insurance industry with respect to restraint of trade. Suffice it to say that several occasions, when they have pointed the finger at us in the restraint of trade area, the court has turned around to point the finger at them. In fact, in two major cases in which we were involved, they entered into consent decrees promising not to continue what the court had found to be anti-competitive behavior in violation of the federal antitrust laws. Now, the second component of the allegation is that we use back alley shops which perform shoddy workmanship, thereby producing unsatisfactory repairs. In my view, our repair guarantee renders that argument a nullity at the outset. The shops we recommend to our customers and whose work we guarantee perform the highest quality work are owned and operated by persons of the highest levels of skill with many, many years of experience in the repair of automobiles. Many are car dealerships, but most are independent auto body shops. These shops observe and appreciate a fundamental precept of the economic system, that with sound management practices, it is possible to make a profit while charging truly competitive price. Mr. Chairman, in the state of Oregon, we settle well over 20,000 of these types of claims per year. We have heard this evening some complaints with respect to four or five cases in which Allstate perhaps made an error. We strive constantly at Allstate to avoid making any errors whatsoever, but we're a big company, and we do settle a huge volume of claims. And if we made mistakes in six which we should not have made in any, that still represents an infinitesimal amount of the total claims settled. Now, we made no effort to find people who have written to us expressing much satisfaction and pleasure with our claim settlement practices. I'm sure that would be possible. But the fact of the matter is that the number of people who have serious difficulty with the manner in which their claims are settled probably represent less than 0.5% of all claimants. And we are, in fact, pleased with this result. And as State Farm mentioned, our experience in Oregon with respect to our customers returning to us for their insurance and people coming to us for insurance in the first instance has indeed been gratifying. We are a growing company here, and our renewal ratios here are very high. Strong evidence in our view that the people appreciate the manner in which we proceed to settle their claims. Finally, I would like to mention very briefly three points which I believe might warrant further study. I admit that I had not intended to produce any kind of legal document with respect to some constitutional questions which have been raised about the bill, but I think it's important that they be brought to the committee's attention. The bill prohibits any kind of joint venture between an insurance company and any person involved in the auto body repair industry. Now, I realize that joint venture is perhaps a word of art in a limited context. It's a word of art which has been expanded in some areas with respect to antitrust inquiries. The real question arises by virtue of the fact that a violation of that provision would give rise to criminal penalties under the Oregon Code, and I think would expose that provision to constitutional acts and probably produce a successful result on a decision based on vagueness. Let me indicate that we in the state of Illinois have operated, have opened a facility owned by one of our subsidiaries, which is in the process currently of repairing automobiles. The intent of that facility is not to get into the automobile repair business, but we wanted to find out whether or not the $80 million or millions of dollars we were spending annually on automobile repair were being spent wisely. Now, if it could be interpreted that that is a body shop operation, and we are an insurance company, Another constitutional question is raised by virtue of potential extraterritorial reach of a statute such as this, for although we have no body shop operation in the state of Oregon and never intend to have one, it would be possible for someone to interpret that as reaching our Illinois operation. I think the committee should focus on that. Finally, I think there's a very basic question raised by the legislation in the constitutional area, and that involves the fundamental First Amendment freedoms. Section 382 says that we cannot, or our adjuster at a claim center or in the field cannot recommend a repair shop. Now, it seems to me that that is clearly a restriction on free speech per se. Now, whether or not a court would find some reasonable exercise of police power to justify that is a substantial question in view of the fact that the court seemed to be immensely reluctant to justify any absolute prohibition on the exercise of speech. It's a very difficult constitutional question, particularly in this commercial area. But the fact of the matter is that a citizen of the United States is by law prohibited from saying something at the outset, the chilling effect theory. In summary, Mr. Chairman, at Allstate, when we face these kinds of hearings, we feel we're really between the rock and the hard place. In my experience in other Western state legislatures, as well as my experience in Washington, the insurance industry is constantly being battered because of its refusal to exercise its economic power to save the money of its consumers. A frequent argument of Senator Kennedy, for example, in the national health insurance area is that insurance companies have failed to use the strong economic power to bargain with hospitals, doctors, and other health care providers to get a better price for their product and save the consumers money. Mr. Nader raises it in the product liability context and also in the workman's comp system, where some use of economic power might bring about some benefits in terms of premium reductions. Very desirable goals. Yet, when we do design programs which we believe meet the public need for good quality repair at a reasonable price, and which do also meet the need to exercise some loss control efforts on our part, therefore bringing down premiums to the total population of consumers, not just those who have claims, but to everybody, we face ourselves confronted with an issue such as this, where our good faith efforts to help all of our consumers and to settle claims fairly brings about charges that we're trying to restrict competition. I think we're fostering competition because we are the consumer, and we're an informed consumer in the body shop area, and there's a lot of people out there who are willing to compete effectively, and we would hope that you allow this beneficial competitive marketplace to continue to function freely in this state. That is all I have to offer by way of testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We'll be reviewing your statement in a little more leisure and may perhaps have further questions at that point. Notify you through Mr. Davis. Dennis?
Do you have a citation of the New York statute you referred to that was similar to this?
I think it's in Jake Lynn Wheaton's.
Yeah. I believe it's in
the
red book.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the blue book.
That the provisions of that statute have not been challenged on the constitutional ground yet. It was felt by many that an effort would be underway to eliminate that statute since we now can prove increased costs. But the legislature got distracted, as did the insurance industry, because of intense needs to alter their no-fault law first, which was kind of the higher priority item.
Thank you. Mr. Is it Hisman?
I see.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Western. Or Webster, I guess it is. Jerry Webster. Mr. Can't read the last name. Is it Goodland? Murray Goodland?
Conklin.
Sorry. I
get
a little bad about this title.
I'm an independent body shop owner, one-man operation, so to speak. And I feel that this bill, if it goes through, will eliminate me from business in the fact that the bigger shops who can afford to advertise are going to take the majority of the work. I'll still survive, however, with the following that I have, but the consumer is the one that's going to suffer from this mainly. Because when he goes into a shop to have his car refixed, whether it's on one estimate or two estimates, or just drive in and fix it, the insurance company will pay for it. That shop, I don't care how big it is going to have to have some kind of financing set up, because there is no way that they're going to let the car go out without it being paid for first. And in Canada, I was up there last year, the government owns the insurance companies. Their flat rate up there is $20 an hour. If you have a shop and you're at 25, the government pays $20 an hour. Now, when you get your check is when the government decides to pay. Maybe it's in 3 weeks, maybe it's in 6 weeks, maybe it's in 6 months. And this type of thing, I feel, would happen if we had this bill passed. The insurance company would be in no hurry to settle with the insured. And the shop is going to have to collect that money from the consumer, because he can't afford to let that car go out of the shop without collecting it, because there is no way now that he can put a lien on the car unless he actually has the car in his possession. So the consumer is going to have to find the financing to pay for it. And I just, in my own mind, the body shops, the bigger ones, are going to get wealthy, so to speak. Consumers are going to be unhappy because they are going to have to put out money themselves to tell time that the insurance company decides to settle on the claim.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks very much. Mr. Woods?
Chairman, members of the
committee. I'm a manager of a large independent body shop in McMinnville. I vote against this measure. You've already heard everything everybody had to say tonight, and it's just about to all repeat. But I do feel on a couple things that the cost of this bill in its present form would be a great cost to the consumer, but more so than a lot, it's going to be a lot bigger cost to the average body shop for the overhead it's going to bring up, because it is going to raise their overhead in a lot of areas.
Could you elaborate on that, Mr. Woods? I don't understand what overhead items particularly would be affected.
We no longer have an agent or a company recommending a shop that does good work. So now, we must advertise in the paper, telephone book, anywhere we can get our name. A record driver can recommend us that we do good work. A new car dealership that has no body shop can recommend us. But under this bill, a insurance company that you have done good work for can no longer recommend you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. Questions? Smith? Johnny Smith?
My name is Johnny Smith. Can you hear me?
Speak just a little more loudly.
My name is Johnny Smith. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I am to one of the consumers' complaints against insurance. State Farm is one. An automobile accident, and they recommended me to do two things. One of the two things: either get two bids or bring the car in. So I got the two bids. I sent the bids in to them. Then, after sending the bids in, they're taking the second bid, which was required of the damage on the car, which would not cover the amount, even of the lowest bid. And my car was repaired by the okay then. My car, then I had to secure a rental car by writing a letter statement used a rental car. And after using the rental car, they denied the fact that you paid the bill then. My car was still tied up. I still had to wait 5 weeks before I could get my own car. After suffering humiliation, phone calls, and finally they paid part of the bill, I picked up my car, ended up in the hospital, nervous breakdown from all humiliation. 4 months later, I was involved with them again. My son also was involved with them. I reported, turned in to the complaint, and immediately I recognized the voice of the insurance adjuster. I called my lawyer, turned the whole claim over to him. He wanted to talk to me because he didn't think it was necessary to secure a lawyer to have a bill repaired. I also continued to work with the lawyer who they fully paid the amount of the bill. They wanted to talk to me repeatedly, but I refused. I still have a balance owing on my car that have not been paid 2 years later that is owing to a shop in which I had taken it to. So I think that they had said if I wanted the rest of the bill paid, pay it myself. And I asked them, well, if I have to pay it, why can't your insurer pay the bill? I'm not your customer or anything. Why can't they pay the bill if I have to pay it? Well, that's the way we operate.
Lombard?
Was State Farm your insurance company or the other party's insurance company?
The other party.
Okay.
Questions further? Thank you for coming down. Sylvia Taylor.
My name is Cecilia Taylor, and I'm from Ashland, and I'm insured by Allstate. And around the 1st of November, I have a 76 Chevy pickup, and the brakes locked, and we hit a tree. And that was around the 1st of November, and I took it, I called the insurance agent, and he said to take the car or take the truck to Skinner Buick. I've been insured for 12 years, and it's the first time we had an accident. So I took it into Skinner Buick, and they had the truck. Well, first, they said the body man there said that it should have either been totaled or a new frame. And the agent's name was Ralph Gruber, and he told me that it could be fixed, it could be patched, and it would be just as good as it was before. And then the other fellow, the frame man, he said that, well, yes, we could put a piece on there and patch it up. So this is what they did. And then they had the truck in there almost 3 months. And I kept going back and told them I needed the truck because that's our only way into our ranch that we have. It's with four-wheel drive. So I'd go back and the truck was still maybe they do a little work and then they park aside. And they said they don't get paid for staying onto one vehicle. They have to work on other vehicles as they go because they don't get that much. So my truck sat there until it was almost the end of January. And finally they let me have the truck. And on the way home, my hood kept bouncing open. And the steering wheel, you turned it a time and a half to two times around before the wheels would turn. And we live between Klamath Falls and Ashland and go with the Green Springs Highway, which is a very, real bad road. Well, my children told me I better have it taken to another shop, so we took it to Keith Schultz Diagnostic Center. and he made out a list of things that was wrong with it. And there was only one bolt holding the top of the truck to the frame. There was one bolt holding the steering gear together, you know, that's why it was turning around and around. And it was loose. And he tightened that one bolt. And he gave me a list of all the different things that was wrong with the truck. The frame was still bent. The door was crooked. The hood was out of kilter. And so I took it back, and I called the Allstate, and he met me down at Skinner Buick. And he says, well, we'll get it fixed. And I says, well, I want a new frame under that. I understand the frame should be replaced. And he says, he got really angry. And he said that you're not going to get a new frame. He says that there's nothing wrong with that frame. And he said they would tighten the bolts. And he says the bolts that were missing, because that's the way I bought the truck. And the truck didn't even have 12,000 miles on it yet. He says that's the way the truck was. And it wasn't because of the accident. And that's why they didn't replace any of the bolts on there. So they fixed it, supposedly. And then I took the truck home, and it still, every time you turn the corner, it go crunch, you know, make all these funny noises. And everybody asked me what was wrong with the truck, because the back is crooked from the front. So I called the head office of Allstate, and he says, well, get a hold of Ralph Gruber again. And he got really angry with me on the phone again. And so there was nothing wrong with that truck, because he looked at it. So finally, I told him at the Skinner Buick when I went back, well, there was a draft coming in the left-hand door where it was hit. And I told him that the door, is, you know, the wind's cold coming through there. And he says, well, we'll adjust it again. Well, it's still blowing air through there. It's still not straight. So I called the insurance. Well, I wrote a letter to the insurance commissioner, and he wrote back and stated that that they were going to get a hold of Allstate and tell them that, you know, find out exactly what was going on. And he said that Allstate called me then and made an appointment, and I met him in Medford and next to Sears. And he said that, well, now I'll give you, there's four different places that have a frame, the same kind of frame machine. And he says, pick one out and I'll call him for you. And I told him, no, I'll call him myself, and then I'll let you know what he said, or have them call you. So I didn't take any of the ones that he told me. And I called Star Body Works and had them look at it, and it's the same things that Keith Schultz said was wrong with it was still wrong with it. And so I told, we got a hold of Allstate, and the first thing they said, well, you're going to get a new frame, because they knew that I had told them that I was going to get a hold of my attorney if something wasn't done. And we've got some pictures. And I've got Keith Schultz, what they wrote here, and what Star Body Works has written here. And when I did, well, this is before they came back and told me I'd get a new frame. The last time I had talked to Ralph Gruber, he told me that when I told him I was going to get a hold of my attorney, he says, well, you should have done that a long time ago. There was nothing I could do about it now. And that's when I got a hold of the insurance commission on that.
Like to leave those materials, we will.
Yes, and oh, and there's another thing too I'd like to say. They closed out, when I went to Keith Schultz, it was the 25th of January. Sometime in January, Allstate closed the account on this truck. And I told Skinner Buick I wouldn't sign any release at all until that truck was fixed right. And Allstate then, see, I've still got the check. Allstate then, it was the 1st of April, they paid off Skinner Buick without me signing them or anything of any release. And the checks are still here.
Questions?
Did you get one of Allstate's VIP guarantee,
no.
written guarantees?
No, I didn't. I didn't get a guarantee from anyone. They told me that it was guaranteed. Their work would be guaranteed. But in the condition, if you read this, the condition of the truck, if they patched it up and put a bolt in every time it went back or something, it'd be 10 years. I'd be running back and forth.
Thanks for coming up.
Thank you. Mr. Cadell. Mr. Richard Cadell. Cadell. Mr. Hesla.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Marvin Hesla. I'm the branch manager of Motors Insurance Corporation in Portland. I'm responsible for the operations of Motors Insurance Corporation and Sim Insurance Corporation in the state of Oregon. Much has been said in opposition to this bill tonight, and I think I can paraphrase my very short statement and make it even shorter. We are concerned with subsection 1 of section 3. We feel it would prevent an insurance company from requiring an insured to have his car repaired by a particular person. We feel that he should have the right to have his car repaired by whomever and wherever he chooses. However, we feel the bill should make clear that if the shop chosen by the insured refuses to repair his car at a fair competitive price, the insured must pay the difference in cost of repairs if he insists on having repairs made there. We are opposed to Section 3, Subsection 2, which would prevent an insurer from even providing to an insured a list of repairers in his geographic area who can perform the required work on his vehicle. Many insureds ask for this type of information because they do not know which shops are reliable and capable of quality repairs. We feel that certain provisions in Section 5 would appear to place a tremendous burden on the insured in areas where he has little or no expertise, for example, negotiating for the safety, workmanship, and quality of the motor vehicle repairs. Subsection 1 of Section 5 makes reference to an estimate of the cost of repairs which the insureds would have to provide to his insurer. MIC and SIM do not normally require insureds to secure estimates, and we are opposed to any provision which would force such an inconvenience upon our customers. In summation, we are opposed to the overall concept of Senate Bill 718 because we feel it would reduce the ability of insurance companies to control loss costs, it would increase the cost of repairs and eventually insurance premiums, it would impose special burdens and responsibilities on insured vehicle owners, and would reduce services and counsel to which policyholders are entitled. For these reasons, we respectfully urge you to vote against this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Questions? Thank you. Mr. Colbo, Mr. Woody. Mr. Can't read the last name. Courtesy Auto Body. Mr. Bessonette. You look like you're in pretty good shape, Mr. Bessonette.
You're supposed to have gone out of
shaved and cleaned up.
Ready for tomorrow morning, or this morning, I guess, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen of the committee. I hate to bring a little levity into this, but I recall the occasion when a minister was preaching. He kept seeing one of his members looking at the clock, and he said, "You may know what time it is now, but you don't know what time I'm going to stop." And I feel the same way about this committee. I certainly appreciate the lateness of the hour, you people staying here, and the audience staying with us, because it is a rather essential piece of legislation or important piece of legislation and essential from two aspects. One, either pass it, or two, defeat it, I guess. And I appear in opposition to it.
Do you have a preference?
Yes, I do. I am Tom Bessemat with Oregon Mutual Insurance Company. I bring to you a rather uniqueness to the witness chair. Actually, in 1948, I started Body and Fender School at OTI, or OVS at the time, in Klamath Falls. I was the eighth graduate from OTI. We had changed it because in California, Oregon, our vocational schools were rehabilitation centers, and we were all ex-veterans from the war, and we didn't like the connotation. Now it's Oregon Institute of Technology, now that I've graduated. And then I switched to insurance adjusting. So I bring to you the experience of having been a body man, having been a painter, having been an estimator, and also now involved since 1950 in the insurance business. However, I have a great deal of apprehension about this bill for the reasons that I'll identify. One thing, that when a person has a crash with their car, they have a dreaded idea, and sometimes justified, that it cannot be repaired satisfactorily. And I've told them many times, both as an adjuster and as a body and fender man, that we can sometimes repair the car, depending upon its condition. And if I felt we could repair the car, I would say, we can repair your car, but we cannot fix your mind. Because if their minds are set on the fact that the car is never going to be the same, they might just well sell it. It will not be the same to them, no matter what we do with that car. And so we have, therefore, an individual who comes in very distressed to make a claim. At that time, they are wondering what this piece of paper that they purchased is going to do for them. Any good or not? And if we can't render the service that they think we should be able to render to them, which this bill restricts us from doing, then we have a more distressed individual. And let me point out that obviously Section 1 of Section 3 is not to my liking. However, I can appreciate what it's there for. Section 2, we've already heard a great deal of testimony about, but let me relate to you an experience of being in a small community, not just Eastern Oregon, but any small community that has two body shops. One very capable and one incapable. And then you cannot recommend to the insurer that he takes his vehicle to the capable shop. What kind of a dilemma are you leaving that insured in when he comes back in and says, why didn't you tell me? And we'd have to say that the Oregon legislature passed a law that refused to allow us to tell you. I also have rather severe apprehensions about precedence that has started with sub 3, and we have not talked much about section 3, sub 3, where the insurer cannot enter into other businesses of this nature. I think here we're moving into a precedential aspect of vertical integration requiring a divestiture of the free enterprise system, because we're restricting what somebody can do with these businesses. Congress is wrestling right now with the vertical integration of the petroleum industry, and they're moving very, very slowly in this area, even though some people are screaming for the divestiture, because they realize that this is a total structure of the free enterprise system. And therefore, sub 3 of Section 3 does have some potential, because you have heard it many, many times in the legislature, is there a precedence for what we're doing? And with the passage of sub 3 of 3, you have started a precedence of forcing industries to divest themselves of some interest or not go into some interest. And I'm concerned about that precedent being established. On Section 5, basically now there are two requirements in the insurance policies relative to the duty of the insured at the time of the loss. Now you're going to crank into the policy many, many more provisions. It has several of them itemized. However, by the time we have to write the words that will comply with all the types of accidents that might occur, before the accident actually does occur, we have to have the foresight to determine what the accident's going to be, how they're going to have to take care of all these provisions, and every policy provision we put in there gives us, the insurance company, one more reason that we can fail to pay a claim. Because if our insurer does not comply with the policy provisions, he's violated his contract, and therefore we do not have to pay the claim.
if it's instrumental in increasing the cost. So I think this Section 5 in total is very adverse to the insuring public. Today, they merely have to notify the insurance company of the accident, give them the facts of the accident, and allow us to inspect the vehicle. Doesn't say a thing about going and getting an estimate or anything else. It allows us to inspect the vehicle. Those are the only two provisions. Now, there has been some spin-off effects that have come about through precedences, but those are the two provisions within the policy itself. Another one that I would revert back to sub 2 on, the one that we cannot make recommendations about, let's assume that the individual hit a rock, a roadbed collision we call it, and damaged his transmission. He doesn't have any idea where to take his car to have his transmission repaired. Maybe he's ruined his radiator, and he doesn't know where to go to have his radiator repaired. These spatial type repairs, maybe he's had a wiring shortage, and maybe there's a wiring expert in town. According to this provision, we could not take advantage by recommending to our insured where spatial repairs should be made, not just the physical damage in the body shop. We're talking about other things that originate as a result of a collision loss. And as an example of the redundancy of this, in G, initiating against the insurer arbitration proceedings, most insurance companies, all but one that I know of, already have the arbitration or the appraisal portion of the policy, which is very simple. If the insured and the insurer disagree, one of them writes to the insurance or notifies the other party that they want to place this discussion in appraisal. The other party appoints an appraiser on his behalf. The insurance company appoints themselves one on their behalf. The two appraisers then get together, appoint a third appraiser, and a decision of the two appraisers agreeing is accepted. Now, if that's not acceptable to the insured, then they still can go right on, you think, right on into the action of court with the policy provisions or the ORS provisions that attorney fees are paid to the prevailing party against an insurance policy. I would also hasten to say that we would increase our claims costs because we, Oregon Mutual, pay rental value or rental cost of insurance of our insured vehicles while they are disabled, and there is nothing in the policy that requires them to expedite the repairs, nothing in our contract that says when our repairs will terminate as far as the rental value is concerned, because we pay it on a basis of so many dollars. I'd like to summarize it with this thought. In the state of Oregon in 1975, there were 95,000 crashes in automobiles. Assuming now that 1.5 cars were involved in each crash, in other words, some of them were one car, but some of them are going to be 3 and 4 cars, let's assume that there was 150,000 cars involved in these crashes. There is bound to be some complaints come out of the repairs of those because of the psychological attitude of the insured at the time of this car is damaged. This does not include the claims that are under $200 because they do not have to be reported to the Motor Vehicle Division. And therefore, I think that we're bound to have some continuing complaints beyond this legislative session about this very thing. Another and final argument that I'd like to present to you is a statistical fact developed by myself when I was working as a claims manager for Oregon Mutual Insurance Company, and over a period of 4 years I kept track of the increased cost of collision damages, and they increased over a 4-year period 38%. Property damage, however, increased 54%. The logic behind this: on the collision damages, we normally would contact our insured and ask him, what shop do you want to have the car repaired by? And they would identify the shop, whatever it might be, whoever it might be. We would then normally contact an independent appraiser and have him go out and come to an agreed price with that shop to repair that car. A very mutual arrangement between the two of us. And as a result of that, we were able to have our claims paid with only a 38% increase, which would include about, in those 4 years, about the inflationary increase. However, we did not use that same procedure. We allowed the owner of the vehicle to go out and get an estimate from wherever he wanted on the property damage claim,
And during that same 4 years, our property damage claims increased 54%. So I submit that this bill definitely, and that demonstrates that this bill will definitely increase the cost of insurance in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Hawkins? Oh, wait a minute. Mr. Gracie? Roger Gracie. Mr. Hawkins.
Thank you for your patience. I think all of us should note the early hour of the morning, and for those that don't have our spouses with us and we have to commute back home, we can go back and tell them that we had a lot of witnesses there that said a funny thing happened to us down here at the legislature. So I hope I can get by with that tonight. My name is Walter Hawkins. I'm a resident agent representing insurance.
We'll give you a signed kind of
call. That's what I need.
Verification.
If you were here, maybe you could help me out with it too. I don't know. Anyway, my name is Walter Hawkins. I'm representative of the Insurance Crime Prevention Institute. We're a trade association that is supported by about 315 insurance companies throughout the United States. There are only two insurance companies that are here mentioned tonight that are not members of our association. However, in total, we do represent the entire insurance industry in the casualty and property loss field. And for those two companies that are not members, we don't take the direct referrals of their suspect fraud losses, but after investigation of some other type of case, we can pick those up. Our position on this was naturally neutral tonight until after looking over the bill, it was apparent one phase of it that we have not dealt on, and that is the possibility of the property loss claim being inflated, in which there's been numerous references to it at different rates, different prices, different hourly wages of different shops do prevail. But overall, there are some claims that are inflated. And where in the insurance industry, people adjust a claim, they suspect it's fraud in it, and they want to refer to our organization. It's our then responsibility to investigate for criminal prosecution a possible fraud behind this investigation. Section 5 of Part E there, where it says the individual insured shall negotiate his own claim, merely opens up the whole area to the person that wants to make a big rip off the consumer system. That is, we have what we call in the investigation business cappers or runners, people who solicit business either for the casualty injury or the casualty accident or the property accident. I think more specifically, a lot of them you may know them as ambulance chasing. This not only involves a person on the street that goes out, sees an accident, solicits the business to take it over to Joe Blow's shop, and he'll give you a good deal on it. And while you're over there, he may look at the damage and see that there's other damage and says, well, we'll just include all of it in there. And first thing you know, the insurance company has a problem on their hands trying to adjust the claim. This not only inflates that part of it, and eventually we get into lawyers picking up the claim, and they add a few bucks to it, and there are injuries, and the doctor becomes involved. So we have the whole gamut, and we are involved, actively involved in these type of investigations. The Portland area, present time, there are two shops that are under somewhat a current investigation in this area. And I'll just take a brief minute. Excuse me, I'll let the chair have.
What about
you can call him again?
Go ahead.
But anyway, our position on this would be that Section 5 is simply deals with an area that would leave everyone liable for possible fraud claims. And if you're the emotional people like my wife is, I've accused her many times of driving by sound, based on the dents and things that I see on the car when I come home. And if she were involved in one of those accidents, I can well imagine what her ability to be would be to adjust this type of claim on her own. And I'm sure this involves many people that are the so-called consumer purchaser of insurance. But our purpose tonight was to offer to the committee, since a late hour, a private hearing, if they would like at some later date, a training film called A Biography of a Body Shop. It's designed for the insurance industry people. It shows them some of the pitfalls and the possibility of loading up or inflating a claim. And you've heard how the films are rated, probably. There's PG, R, and X, and we'll have to add one more as I. Now, according to my definition, PG means the good guy gets the girl, R means the bad guy gets the girl, and X rating means everybody gets the girl. Now, I is the only one left, so you can figure out how little there's going to be for that kind of value, but it is an informational film. And if the committee would like to hear it, I'll leave my card and my phone number and so forth with them, and at some later date they would like to hear it, why, we'll offer...
Well, we're still pretty fresh from my one.
Two segments are 23 minutes each, and they're two reels, so they would take a little bit of your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Jeremy, you spelled my name.
Mr. Hawkins?
Mr. Albert, I wonder if you...
I got a note to your wife.
Catch it again.
I just got it back, Mr. Barlow. Mr. Barlow has skipped. Some people just don't have staying power. Mr. Hulbert, who has returned.
I profess to have fallen asleep down there. It's
not fair to go out and take a nap and come back.
I don't usually say it for the late show, so...
You want to try to pretend as though you had not gone out in terms of how brief and concise...
Not that it wasn't industry, Mr. Chairman.
We know you will be brief and concise.
More than you think. My name is Carl Hubbard. I'm Western Counsel for the National Association of Independent Insurers, and our member companies, which number over 400, write over 40% of all the automobile insurance business in this country. And when you figure that 80% of the body shop's business is related in insurance-related business, we all obviously have a very material interest in what happens with SB 718. We do oppose it, and we oppose it for some reasons which are not basically a part of the bill. I've heard the constitutional arguments, and I've heard the insurance department's position. I've heard others, and I believe that they are valid. Our companies are range from the largest to the very smallest that operate within the state. They are substandard companies. They are very mutual. They're mutual companies. There's reciprocals and Farm Bureau companies and many others. I'm not here to defend or profess to take the stand of the major companies who have already testified. I think they obviously state their positions rather well, but we have many, many, many small companies, and today we're faced with probably the greatest strain we've ever had on our capital surplus, and where to do business, and how to do business, and where can we make a profit, and where can't we make a profit. These small companies, if they're forced into a position where they're going to be hamstrung with additional responsibilities and problems involving body shops, insureds, and mandatory positions on arbitration and many other things, they'll obviously withdraw from the state, I think, voluntary or involuntary, as Commissioner Rawl said, and it will result in a less competitive market in the state of Oregon. Many of our companies maybe only have $1 million worth of surplus, a capital and capital surplus maybe combined of $2 million. Under a rule of thumb, which the insurance departments used throughout the United States, they maybe only are allowed to write, say, $3.5 or $4 million total dollars worth of premium. If you're going to have a piece of legislation passed here that will make it harder for these companies to operate within the state, and they're responsible companies, they pay their claims and they operate within the good purviews of the insurance industry, they would automatically withdraw and go to neighboring states or other places where they felt the atmosphere was more susceptible to their making a profit and doing business on a fairly competitive basis. we supported very vigorously the Unfair Trade Claims Practices Act, which has been passed in your state and most states across the nation. It is my belief, in looking at the Oregon Code and the legislation that was passed at that time, that the insurance department, the insurance commissioner, does have the authority at the present time, in fact, is charged with the responsibility of regulating, either by a direct order or by a regulation, most of the complaints that have been spoken to tonight. I've heard many complaints. Most of them, obviously, have been either from, I'd say most of them have been from body shops. The insurance industry has been defending these activities. When you feel there's over, 195,000 claims in the state, 24 million claims a year in the country, and you have this many body shop problems, obviously it's a very minor part of the business. And to pass legislation that may throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of concerns us as to what we have to do to provide marketability and capacity at an affordable price to the residents of the state of Oregon. We oppose the bill because of the reasons we spoke of. We feel you have ample law at the present time to regulate this, if you feel there is, to charge the insurance department with any type of order that you may have to come back with regulations or otherwise. And we feel that the problem that we're talking to tonight is only the surface of the problem. We think there are very many responsible body shops. We think that the problem of communication between our industry and the body shops is very negligent. We think that the training of people to go into the auto shop body business is one of the major problems. The average age of the repairman is a problem. How to get the income up of these people is a problem. How do we get proper discount to the independent auto shop versus the franchise automobile dealer? How can he compete? How do they compete on used parts? These are all a part of this problem. It isn't just the fact that we're saying to them, you know, this price has to be competitive, has to be reasonable, has to be efficient, and it has to satisfy everybody. These are all problems that are in it. And we have conducted this, was mentioned a little while ago, a survey which we started on, and this was the one that I think a gentleman talked about before I fell asleep, and he mentioned that we were conducting this survey, which we have.
I thought you were kidding.
And it did include...
You weren't kidding.
So you didn't sleep very long. But some of these garages were in the state of Oregon. And I think it'll be very interesting for you to see just how deep these problems are. And and then I think maybe you may address yourself to legislation that you may feel solve the problem, not just add an additional piece of legislation which won't really add anything to the insurance department's responsibility, which they already have. So because of the reasons specified before by the people who have talked, when the industry and our minor companies, we just feel this with legislation is not necessary.
Thank you. Questions? As much as it's 2 minutes before 2 in Salt Lake City.
That's right. Thank you for the nap.
You're certainly welcome. I hope I haven't missed anybody. If there are any of you who do want excuse slips to take home, Mr. Bronka down there will be signing for the committee. Thank you for coming. I think that I don't know whether the committee will have a further hearing in combination with work session or just work session, but we'll get notices out for purposes of further hearings. If you'd like to be notified, Dennis, will you leave a yellow pad out there on the table? Leave your name and address. Most of the names on the witness list do not include the addresses, so if you're not already on our mailing list for the committee notices, if you'll add your name and address, we'll see what you can do. Thank you.
Thank you.